Hello and welcome to Brain Trust Live number 254.
This week on the podcast, the new Sean Spicer is a Nickelodeon villain who donated to Barack Obama.
And Russia actually called us thugs this week, which is cute.
Plus, zombie healthcare will kick a new and exciting figure of 32 million people off their healthcare. Way to keep playing, guys.
And Al Gore is the latest borderline Republican to come out in favor of single payer.
Plus, Democrats' new motto urges us not to lose faith. Our most mediocre times are still ahead of us.
And a spicy goodbye to America's most exciting and irreverent character in the nation's first reality presidency.
We'll have all this and more.
This is Brain Trust Live. Hey guys, I'm Brent.
I'm Lila, and you can find us on the web at www.braintrustlive.com.
That's right.
Next week, you'll be able to find us at Politicon.
At Politicon, yeah,
which
man.
Which is so exciting.
Come find us.
Come find us if you're
actually
there.
Going.
I
if
know.
If you're not going but can, fix that. Because
exactly.
Like,
it's easy to.
Fix your life.
Exactly.
Like, go.
What are your priorities?
Otherwise, we'll be on the Soch.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Catch us on the Facebooks, the Instagrams,
that's right.
The Twitters.
Yeah, more so than we normally are, we promise.
Much more so.
Yeah.
And we'll probably take funny photos in line because there's a little bit of waiting in line there. I'm like,
yeah, that's
so
what we do.
With?
We took a lot of funny photos last year.
Yeah, last year was chock full.
There was like a
funny.
Mysterious art gallery there last year.
I know. And it's in the same place this year, so there probably will be
again.
Yeah. Can't wait. But
yeah.
There's lots of exciting people coming.
Yes.
The, mm-hmm. That
Tony
much.
Lauren and
yeah.
Coulter. I always get way more excited about like the wacko, like lunatic Republicans,
well,
obviously.
Course.
Like.
This
who,
is where
who wants to go see Jake Tapper?
Like zero people, but
yeah,
this is
I
where
mean,
we discovered our great obsession with Michelle Bachmann.
Yeah, and Sarah Palin.
And Sarah Palin. I mean,
yeah.
You know,
yeah.
We have
yeah.
some priorities.
Yeah.
In any case, this was an exciting news week for real
really
gossip
was.
Reasons.
Totally.
Not much went on, but
no. gossip
boy, was
city.
It was worth it for
yeah.
the gossip.
And that's what we live for.
And that's what we live for, exactly. Because
yeah.
Sean Spicer
is out.
And not is not just out, but like
he quit.
Quit.
Yeah.
Just finally
always,
had enough.
Right? And that is really something.
That's
by the way.
When you know. This is a man who's been taking a kind of abuse that I just don't think that we as
yeah.
regular people are prepared
yeah.
to imagine.
This is a man who has to go, well, not in front of television cameras anymore because they stopped doing that.
Stopped
but
doing that.
Who for a long time had to go in front of television cameras and say the most insane things, and he's also insane himself, and he's also an idiot himself too.
When he
so
has anger issues.
It often sort of, you know, those things compounded on
exactly.
themselves.
But
he also was having to do it, you know, wearing you know, obviously, like, presidential ordered, you know, fake tan products, too. I mean, his life has been hard since day one.
Yeah.
So, I mean...
And I think more so than any other character in the melodrama that is the Trump White House, he kind of was the most complicated for us to follow because he kind of earned our sympathy, but also our ire.
Yes.
Like, he was the most... I felt most conflicted about him because
yes.
I felt like... Come on, Sean.
He was having to defend a lot of things.
I wanted him to succeed in a way. I mean,
well, I did too because like he was the press secretary that this administration deserved.
Exactly.
So like you really sort of
you were kind
wanted
of rooting
him to see
for
it through,
him, but
yeah,
but you couldn't.
Uh-huh.
But you also weren't. You know,
yeah.
It was
well, and it was also sort of like you know for you know upsetting comedy reasons.
Right.
I guess if those are things.
Yeah,
I
they are.
Feel like they are. You know, like you definitely wanted to have him succeed because you know from Sean Spicer, we learned about Holocaust centers.
Exactly.
And we learned about various other things that like we really as Americans hadn't learned about previously. He taught us a lot. Yeah.
Some uh-huh. of the things were new takes on history that we had never thought
right.
to think
yeah,
before.
Yeah, I mean the things that he taught us were
wrong.
Right,
factually speaking,
right.
wrong.
right. Yeah.
I think emotionally speaking and entertainment
right.
speaking, wise speaking,
uh-huh.
they were interesting.
Yes.
I wouldn't call them exciting or anything.
He also
they
gave
were...
us April Ryan.
No, exactly.
I mean, he didn't specifically give us April. April Ryan has been April Ryan forever. But
White House
like,
press corps.
We know who she is now because of
was he was sort of single-handedly creating celebrities by accident.
Totally.
Melissa McCarthy became relevant in a way she hadn't been.
People were worried about
again.
Her. Guys, she's fine.
She's doing...
By the way.
Yeah, she's still
yeah.
a huge movie star. Like,
and,
let's not
and
forget.
And also... Like, what? Are we going to sit here and pretend that if she can play Sean Spicer, she can't also play Sarah Huckabee Sanders?
Exactly.
I mean...
Who is she better suited to playing in an honest world?
Yeah.
But my favorite thing about learning about this was the discovery from several sources that were close to Spicer that the reason he had stopped doing the press conferences on camera was not to obstruct freedom of the press, as we had assumed.
Sure.
That was why the rest of them went along with it.
Yeah.
But it was because he was sick of getting shit from Trump, and he was trying to minimize his appearances so that he wouldn't be able to be, like, quoted and then, you know, dragged
That's
through
amazing.
The mud by
yeah.
the Donald.
Yeah, if Trump can't see it on TV, then he doesn't know
he
it
doesn't
happens.
Know what happened. Right. Yeah. So they basically just started holding them so that he could keep his head up.
Yeah.
Which is hilarious and sad. Yeah. But Trump, the reason that he left was because Trump went and offered the head of his communications team. Boy, I had a hard time saying that.
That's okay.
To Anthony Scaramucci.
God.
Who is his own brand of interesting.
He really is.
They've
We're going to get to him.
Without a comms director for about 2 months now. And so he appointed Scaramucci, a former Democrat, a former socially liberal guy, the guy that that Kushner and Ivanka wanted in the, in the White House. He appointed him and as Spicer's boss, basically. And Spicer was like, no.
Passed.
And so that's why he left. But Scaramucci is like a smoother, slicker Trump.
Yes.
He's from Long Island. The Times described him as, quote, a smooth-talking, Long Island-bred former hedge fund manager who's currently the senior VP and chief strategy officer at the Export-Import Bank. But what they say in the next sentence is that he only got there a month ago. So sure. He's only been that guy for a month.
Yeah.
But in Trump's circle, he's known as the Mooch.
Ah, sure. Scaramucci.
Scaramucci.
The Mooch.
That's right.
Yeah.
In any case, so Sarah Huckabee Sanders is now going to be the press secretary.
Sure.
But Trump has sort of said he's willing to try a few people out in that
position.
So she doesn't necessarily have the job as front man.
Yeah, I feel like they should just be like, a total like clown car. I
think that
it would be appropriately representative of the administration if that's how they decided to operate with their press secretary.
It's sad for me to say this, and I hope everyone realizes that I understand where I'm coming from when I say this, but Sarah Huckabee Sanders is almost too good for them. She's almost too professional for the...
Yikes.
And she's literally... Mike Huckabee's daughter, among other things. I mean, she's like not too good for them, but I almost feel like she's too kind of bland and,
Oh, yeah, for sure.
Like, I don't think that she offers the reality television excitement.
She definitely
that
does not.
They're hoping for.
No.
And it's interesting because it seemed like Trump really wasn't trying to cause a shakeup here. It was like an accidental shakeup. He does this a lot where he doesn't realize that he's going to make a bombastic choice that's going to piss everyone off. And then they might actually do something.
Yeah.
They might just not like wander around being like, well, I guess we just have to listen to Donald Trump. So he did it because he was angry that he felt like they were accomplishing so much, but they're just not being given the credit.
Yeah.
The problem isn't that they can't pass any piece of legislation whatsoever and that all of their executive orders are being torn down in court.
That's the
problem is that they're accomplishing a lot, but
the
fake media is not giving them
credit
for these accomplishments.
Well,
and Scaramucci is going to be
fix it all.
Fixing that. Yeah. He's also going to stop the leaks.
Interestingly, later in the podcast, we're going to get to the Democrats sort of thinking the same thing about themselves.
Yeah, so true.
So,
yeah, stay tuned.
Yeah, stick with us for that.
Stick with us. But yeah, Trump sent Spicer off, I think, in the kindest manner he could gather.
Sure.
Which was, he said that he was a wonderful person who took tremendous abuse from the fake news media,
yeah.
but his future is bright.
Oh, good.
But then he said probably the nicest thing he's ever said about Sean Spicer, which is, just look at his great television ratings.
There it is.
That's it.
Yep.
That's the Trump seal of approval.
That's it.
Sean Spicer is a success.
Can do anything
Sean
now.
Spicer
That's right.
can generate ratings.
Yep.
They're going to have a hard time, actually, I think, finding someone who does as good a job at generating ratings, in part because the sort of shock factor is going to wear down. So, like, now any clown is going to look like a reasonable part of this administration.
Well, right.
It's not.
Well,
Spicer came on and we were like, what on earth is happening here? And it was entertaining.
Yeah, well, that's why they should get somebody like, I mean, they should have, I feel like when they were talking about, like, doing the shakeup, and, like, he was always on the list of names that, like, were going to get fired. So, like, God bless him for
circulating forever.
Yeah. But I feel like there were solid people. I feel like, weren't they floating, like, Laura Ingraham as, like, a possibility? That's where we need to get back to here. I mean, let's get...
Pull it together and let's get those ratings back. I don't want to see the ratings slip any more than Trump does.
No. I don't either.
Interestingly, Scaramucci had already been on Trump's shortlist. And Trump had wanted to appoint him even during the transition. But Renz Priebus had some concerns about his overseas investments and therefore his connections overseas.
But Trump doesn't have those concerns.
Trump doesn't share those concerns, clearly. No. But Priebus successfully
that makes him a smart
held
guy.
Him up. He Exactly.
Yeah.
Priebus had held up the nomination basically forever and then it never happened. This time, Priebus, apparently a reporter asked Priebus what he thought about this appointment, and he slammed the door in his face.
It was John Carl.
Was that it? Was John Carl?
Yeah, right.
It was ABC West. But so, in any case, there's some real drama that we're going to get to in a second, because not only Rince Priebus isn't a fan, but Steve Bannon's not a fan either. So
well, we've told you.
This is adding some craziness to the polls of power.
We've talked a lot on the podcast about how there have sort of been these, like, two factions forming, like, within the White House. And there's the faction that Bannon rightly calls the Democrats, because some of them are former Democrats, like Jared Kushner and Ivanka Trump. And also there's that guy who's on his economic team who was had worked for, I can't remember his name right now. But I mean, like, so he is going to sort of, like, at least as far as Bannon is concerned, fall into, you know, the Democrats.
Yeah.
Even though I think that, like, most recently he was working for Scott Walker or something like that.
Right.
But I
mean, he donated to Obama. He's donated to Clinton. He's pro-choice.
He's made control
comments in the past about gun control, about a lot of socially liberal issues.
Yeah. So obviously, like, it was Bannon was not having it.
Yeah, he's not looking for this kind of guy. Another Long Island asshole.
Right. Yeah.
Who goes by the Mooch.
Yeah.
But it's really. There is some great potential here, because, as I'm sure you can tell from hearing words in places, Scaramucci's name is Scaramouche, basically, which is a great stock character from Commedia dell'arte.
I mean, like, it's so crazy.
It's like he's an operatic character that I'm gonna read the Wikipedia definition for what Scaramouche was, because
please.
I feel like that kind of most encompasses what is happening here, because it's so perfect.
Yeah.
So he's a stock, you know, he's a stock clown character in Commedia dell'arte. The role combined characteristics of Zani, servant, and the Capitano, masked henchman. Usually attired in black Spanish dress and burlesquing a don, he was often beaten by Harlequin for his boasting and cowardice.
I mean, that's
so perfect.
That's the guy.
That's it.
That's him.
He's living his truth.
Yes.
In every possible way. But as Brent also pointed out, the name also lends him the quality of, like, a really shitty TV villain.
It's such a, like, bad villain name. And I said to you, I was like, it's not even like a movie villain, but
like a comic book, you said.
Yeah, like in a comic book or just like a, you know, like a bad kids cartoon that, like, literally, like, takes place in one act.
Yeah.
Like,
Brent said the type of villain who could be outsmarted by kids on Nickelodeon in one act. I think that basically... That perfectly encompasses it.
Yep.
I hope you stand by that.
I am still standing by that right now. Yes.
Today he's promised to take dramatic action to stop
the leaks. There's been more leak obsession this week.
I'm excited about what that dramatic action could be. But first, we want to talk a little bit about the treasure trove that is his Twitter account.
Yes. He posted on his Twitter that he was going to be deleting some of his old tweets, which I would maybe say was not the right thing to post on your Twitter account. Yeah.
I guess he was being like, listen, guys, I get that I'm deleting tweets. It's a new era, and I can do that. And
but you can't.
Now I'm being transparent about it.
Right.
But the thing is...
You can technically delete tweets from your own Twitter account.
You can't delete them from the internet.
But you can't delete them from life.
No.
Yeah, that's what you can't
and
do.
Because of that, 2012 and 2011 seemed to be really hot years for his Twitter action. Hot Twitter action going on.
Yeah.
He tweeted in February of 2012, Trump to endorse Gingrich, odd guy, so smart with no judgment. Mitt Romney praised for the governor's decision to stay out of the Trump spectacle.
Yes.
That was in 2011. Yes. Uh-huh. I believe he tweeted, I don't support that legislation. Never have. I've always been for strong gun control laws.
Yep.
He tweets about gun control laws. If Hillary keeps this up, she might be back in play for 2016. I hope she runs. She's incredibly competent.
Oh, my. Yes. He also talked about how the USA is 5% of the world's population, but has 50% of the world's guns. And, like, that had to end, I think, was the end of that tweet. That
exactly.
That
He said, I'm not partisan for gay marriage, against the death penalty, and pro-choice. I'm for social inclusion, fiscal responsibility.
Oh, my.
It is a fight with Islam, overwhelming majority see Islam as a religion of peace, want to live in a multiracial, ethnic, faith democracies. You can take steps to combat climate change without crippling the economy. The fact many people still believe climate change is a hoax is disheartening.
Oh, boy.
We, the USA, has 5% of the world. Oh, yeah, you already read that one. But I think my favorite.
This is the best one because it turned into a whole thing.
Has become a meme that I just can't get enough of.
Yeah. Yeah.
He tweeted, Dance like no one's watching. Sing like no one's listening. Love like you've never been hurt and live like it's heaven on earth. Mark Twain.
Oh, Mark Twain. Yeah.
You know the famous Mark Twain quote.
I do, yes.
It resulted in the most amazing collection of song lyrics being attributed to everybody from Jesus Christ to Confucius to Buddha to whoever. Uh-huh. My favorite one was one that flipped the script, though, which was somebody who tweeted, "Do not go gentle into the night, that night. Old age should burn and rave at close of day. Rage, rage against the dying of the light." Kesha.
Yes.
That's a Dylan Thomas poem.
That's good.
And that was my favorite one.
Yeah, I like that one.
But the whole response, like all of the responses to that tweet are amazing.
You check that out.
Check that out. It's all over the internet. There. I mean, if you're on the internet, you can find it. It's absolutely worth it.
Yeah.
So our last story is about Steve Bannon. We literally pulled it from The Blaze because they had the most exciting take on it.
Yeah, well, because The Blaze probably was not happy about the Mooch getting his job.
No, I doubt it.
So they were reporting, like, basically, like, all of the ways in which Steve Bannon was, like, really furious about this. Now, this is from Katie Turr and Stephanie Ruhle, who deserves a freaking award for her commentary on this. But anyway,
what transpires
apparently,
here.
Steve Bannon said directly to Scaramucci, "Over my dead body, will you get this job?"
Yeah.
And that was, like, said to Katie Turr and then confirmed by various other sources that was actually said to him.
Ruhle was reporting on it, though.
Right, on television. On MSNBC. Ruhle was the one that was reporting on it. The quote was
pretty epic.
A dream. Go ahead.
Okay. "I just confirmed with someone inside the White House this morning. Steve Bannon, and remember this press office has basically been run by the Rens Priebus Steve Bannon side of the world, said to Anthony Scaramucci, to his face, 'Over my dead body will you get this job?' Well, here we are 3 hours later, and I'm pretty sure there are no ambulances outside the White House with any dead bodies. But Anthony Scaramucci will be joining this administration."
Yes, Stephanie Ruhle.
God, people, there are times that real reporting can still have a sense of humor, and Stephanie Ruhle...
She did it right there.
Did it right there.
Yeah.
That was the right move.
And that was the best way, and she couldn't have put it better either.
No, that was the perfect way to put it.
Yeah.
But this is going to be interesting, because there are going to be just sort of like some... there's now an emerging new pole of power because Scaramucci is friends with Trump. He's close to Trump.
Yes.
And he is going to pull Trump in a direction that, I mean, I don't think he has like principles necessarily. I don't believe that Trump's going to be pro-choice tomorrow.
No.
But it does seem like he's going to
he might be again.
We never know. Right. Yeah. But it does seem like he's going to be pulled in a direction that is not old line Republicanism or Mercer like madness.
Yeah.
And that will be interesting.
It will be interesting.
You know?
Yes.
The Breitbart Republican side of the world should be nervous about this. I mean, and not for any... Trump didn't plan it that way, by the way. He didn't think to himself, how can I make the Trump... Like,
no.
He just was like, I like this guy.
Yeah, this guy.
Yeah. I mean, that's what he thinks about everything.
Yeah.
In any case, it was an exciting week for Russian news, too. Because we found out that Jeff Sessions was lying more than we even knew he was lying.
He really was.
He really lied to us, you guys. He's a real liar. But more exciting than his lies, which are predictable, but we're going to talk about them in a second, is the fact that on Wednesday, Trump gave an interview in which he said he would have never appointed Jeff Sessions had he known that he would recuse himself from overseeing the Russia investigation.
It's rare to like, I mean, we have heard that he has been pissed at Sessions like for this recusal, but it is rare to really like go in on somebody like this high within your administration, like while they're still serving your administration.
Right.
I mean, like
Jeff Sessions is still the attorney general for all other matters.
Right. He's recused himself from this, but he's still out there making sure that, you know, the immigrants get deported at every turn. I mean, he's still doing what he can to do all of
everything.
The horrible things that Trump would like him to be doing that are, you know, awful. So like,
but I love he kept calling it unfair.
Yes.
He said Jeff Sessions takes the job, gets into the job, recuses himself, which frankly I think is very unfair to the president. Mm. How do you take a job and then recuse yourself? If he would have recused himself before the job, I would have said, thanks, Jeff, but I'm not going to take you. It's extremely unfair. And that's a mild
word. That's a mild word.
To the president.
Yeah.
First of all, I love that he's referring to himself in third person. I'm all about that.
Yeah.
But second of all, so he's been going on, you know, he's ragging on Mueller as usual. Oh. He's talking.
Well, this interview had.
Who's his interview with? It was.
This is the New York Times.
This is the New York Times.
This is the one
interview.
That had the insane healthcare thing, which we're also going to get to in a
little
bit.
Oh, yeah. This interview was filled with gems.
It was great. This whole thing. But yeah, I mean, you know, they've got this new line of, you know, that Mueller has conflicts of interest because he was interviewing for the job and because he had given money to, like, that's a new thing. Like, right. Kellyanne Conway was singing that song on the,
yeah,
you know, the
it's
shows
their new alternative
weekend and
fact.
Stuff like that. Yeah, exactly. So, like, so he talked some about that. They talked about that second unreported meeting that he
meeting
had
with Putin.
With Putin. And
apparently talked about adoption.
Yeah, but but what else they talked about, which was my favorite thing that they talked about, was that they, quote, talked mostly about pleasantries. They didn't exchange pleasantries.
No, they just talked about
them.
How,
like,
you do.
How do you feel when someone asks you about the weather in Russia?
How do you have a conversation?
Right? Does that ever annoy you? Don't you get tired of that?
I really wish, yeah, pleasantries are the worst.
Oh, God. But I love that the fact that he's like, oh, yeah, we talked about adoption, too. Which
that's
is like,
just like what they say. They're like, we only talked to Russia about adoption,
yeah,
obviously.
Yeah, that's the new thing.
As president, I have a lot of high-level meetings about adoption.
Like, no.
No, you don't.
No, you don't.
You're not in any meetings about adoption because that's not an issue the president himself deals with.
No.
But yeah, his new kind of line on the whole Russia thing is, why would I need their help winning the election?
Oh, this quote is also great. It sort of like wrapped the whole Russia thing up with saying, why would I need anything from Russia to help me win this election? There wasn't much I could say about Hillary Clinton that was worse than what I was already saying. Unless somebody said that she shot somebody in the back, there wasn't much I could add to my repertoire.
Like, I like that he went with a specific example.
Right. The
shooting
in
the
back.
In the back.
Well, he's really... Because he talked about like how he could still...
Yeah, shoot someone on Fifth Avenue.
He could shoot.
He loves
shooting
people.
He likes
to talk about shooting people.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Well, he believes that everyone else's life is a waste.
That's right.
And that only his life is precious.
Yeah.
But so what Sessions lied about is fairly troubling to all, especially because we picked it up by spying on the Russians talking about the meeting.
Yes. And we'll tell you what it is, and then we'll tell you why there is a reason why maybe it's not necessarily
thing, right.
what we think that it is. But anyway, yes, like, we heard through, like, our spying on Kislyak that he was telling someone that he had had a conversation with Jeff Sessions about the campaign, like, in 2016, like, in reference to, like, the Russian government, like, talking to him about the campaign.
Right.
Yeah. So that's...
He had two conversations. That information was intercepted. But these were conversations that Sessions first failed to disclose in the first place. Because those were those meetings that he failed to mention.
Right.
Because he was a senator. I had to meet with them.
Yeah.
And now Kislyak is potentially, as according to our spies,
yes,
telling other Russian people that those meetings were campaign related. So that's nerve-wracking if the meetings were both not disclosed and then turned out to be about the very thing that they were not supposed to be about.
Now, as we have learned, we've learned so much about Russian spying, I feel like,
over the last 9 months. It's fascinating how much the Cold War still is going on.
Right, exactly. Because one of the things that I learned, which makes good sense, but is that oftentimes, like, these Russians know that we're spying on them.
Yeah, so they say things for our benefit.
Right, exactly. They're sending out false flags, like, to, you know...
That's what you do when you spy.
Like, when you're on the phone. Yeah, exactly. So, like... Who knows?
Right, nobody knows anything.
We don't know. We don't have the call of he and Sessions talking about it. Or maybe we do. Or maybe they haven't found it. I have no idea. But I mean, it's like we only have him telling someone else, which could be anything.
That's the exciting part about our relationship with Russia, is it can lead to a giant vacuum of gossip that has no facts.
Yeah.
And so we can just talk about it forever.
Yeah, I'm into that.
Yeah. But so that's why Trump is sad that he ever appointed Sessions.
Yeah.
Although, I would like to point out that you can't know that you're going to have to recuse yourself from an investigation into the president's wrongdoing before you take the job.
Correct.
I mean...
You can know whether you yourself
have committed wrongdoing.
And intend to lie about it in front of, like, Senate committees.
Right. But he had already made the decision to do it.
Well, he really had.
You know, and I'm pretty sure Trump supported the decision at the time.
I'm sure he did, yes.
Because it would have been real suspicious if he hadn't.
Right.
Exactly. So, you know, it's exciting. But the reason this is relevant this week is because... The Congress is doing a deal on setting some very big sweeping sanctions.
Yeah, bipartisan.
Bipartisan deal to impose some sweeping sanctions on Russia for the election meddling. And this is creating kind of a issue for Trump because he has to either be in support of it or not. And both of those decisions are pissing off either him or everyone.
Right.
But they decided at the White House that they would go along
to go with it.
With
they
these
sent
sanctions.
Back some changes.
Right. Those are all face-saving changes.
Right. Exactly.
So that they can look like heroes for backing down on how they weren't going to do it.
Yeah.
But it is interesting that in the midst of all of this, Trump is now being forced to support sweeping sanctions against the people that were putting him in office specifically to avoid further sanctions.
Exactly. But, like, this is not, I mean, not that he's one to sort of, you know, buck the system for his own well-being or personal good or whatever it is that, or just plain stupidity. But, like, this is really not a thing that he could veto, I don't think.
No, I don't think so either.
So, I mean.
So he's trying to spin it instead.
Yeah,
that
exactly.
He just doesn't, he still doesn't, he's not doing it because he believes they meddled. With the election.
No, he
not
still
they meddled
that they
in
did.
A race.
Right, yes.
He still doesn't believe that they meddled in the election.
Yeah.
The mooch. He sent the mooch out to go talk to CNN's State of the Union about it. And the mooch said, he basically said to me, hey, you know, this is, maybe they did it, maybe they didn't do it. But he kind of basically was like, Trump still doesn't know what he thinks.
He also went on to say, he said, the mainstream media position on this, that they interfered in this election, it actually, in his mind, what are you guys suggesting? You're going to delegitimize his victory?
It's and all
like,
about...
It's all whether, like, he actually...
victory is real.
Right. It's, that's why we're
it's
having
not
this...
about the
that's
crime.
Why we're having this group who's looking into how many... to voter fraud.
Right.
And, you know, it's all just, like, he only cares about that. It's all ego-based. It's, like, he just wants to be able to... Like, he doesn't want to have to go and be, like, I won because Russia helped.
Exactly.
Like,
this is, but in doing this, he's picking this huge fight with the entire intelligence
community.
That's
what I don't
get.
Like, every time he goes out and says that he doesn't know, he's basically like, you know, the FBI, the CIA, and the NSA all concluded, and this months ago, all concluded that Russia was attempting to influence the election. Now, they didn't say that there
was
collusion,
right.
And they didn't and they never came to any sort of like, yes, they did such and such and such and such, and those things were the things that like led to the, you know, to the result.
And Donald Trump would not have won the election.
Right,
you know,
exactly.
No one said that.
But like to go out and be like, we don't know if they meddled. Like
that's the only thing we know.
We do. That's the only thing that we right. And like the reason that he is getting himself into these sort of like daily like. Bombshell news cycle disasters is because he keeps pissing off the intelligence community because it's them who are leaking all of these
things.
They're
the ones with the information.
Right, exactly.
That's what intelligence communities do is have this information.
Right, exactly.
That's it.
Yes. Yeah. So when we learn that Jeff Sessions was, you know, having conversations with the Russian ambassador about colluding with the Trump campaign about the election, we learned that specifically because Donald Trump pissed off the intelligence community. So like he should stop doing that.
He can't stop himself.
That. Yeah.
Because the reason he's doing it is not for a reason that is the
He could really he couldn't put a total into it because these investigations are ongoing. But like if he just said, yes, Russia meddled, they are assholes. They have been trying to do it for decades upon decades. They may have helped me win, even though I, you know, had no part in it.
Right.
Like, you know, I mean, he could lie about that because we all know we did.
Right.
You know, but like, if he just said something like that, I think a lot of people would probably like get off his
interest,
case for like a while.
Yeah.
It's the fact that he keeps like saying wacko insanity
he's
things
like
and
driven
sending
to make
the mooch on CNN.
Ego-centric statements because the whole thing is that he can't stand the idea that he didn't win fair and square.
Yeah.
And you know what? Winning an election that you lost by 3 million votes isn't winning fair and square.
It's not.
Let's just live with that.
Yeah, that's not a democracy.
George Bush didn't win fair and square.
No, he didn't.
You didn't win fair and square.
No.
Both of you are president now. So just like get fucking over it.
Yeah.
But my favorite thing about the Russia scandal this week was that whole scandal about us taking back their like lairs.
Oh, yeah.
And then they called us thugs in response, which is my favorite thing the Russians have ever said about us.
Right.
We seized.
Get real, guys.
Right? We seized two properties that they were either using as vacation homes or spy hubs.
Or both.
There was a swimming pool at one, right?
I was going to say.
They can't
spy and vacation at the same time.
Yeah, it's a big house. There was room for all of those activities.
Yeah.
But that story was really funny because it was, like, in the midst of all of this breaking, it was, like, a bunch of Russians in the media being, like, Americans are thugs.
Yeah.
They're... they're seizing our property. Yeah,
guys.
Exactly. funny.
Yeah.
In any case, all of this chaos has led us to another question.
Yeah.
Russia chaos, that is.
Yeah.
Because Donald Trump is now making kind of weird overtures to the idea that he has the power to pardon his family. So we just should stop worrying about whether they're guilty. And maybe himself. first of all, I've never been faced with the question of whether a president can pardon himself. And I imagine that a lot of legal scholars have not either. This or constitutional scholars. I mean, this is a kind of fascinating question.
Yeah,
that there is no precedent for.
No.
Because the assumption is if you're committing crimes, then you are going to be impeached and you're then not
going to
have
the right. Or you're going to know that you did it and you do like Richard Nixon and you step down.
Exactly.
That, like, you,
that's what's always happened in the past.
Yeah.
This is a new and exciting terrain
Shit
for
Shit catches up with you and you're like, well,
you're like,
I'm
I don't
want to
go to jail.
I'm not getting impeached.
Exactly.
So, like, see ya. Yeah.
But so as the investigations into whether people inside of the Trump camp colluded, Trump decided to remind us all that he has the complete power to pardon.
The complete power to pardon. Yes.
So he sent an early a series of early morning messages on Twitter, as he is wont to do, that he doesn't need to use the pardon power.
No.
Unless it's the only option left.
Right. But he has it.
But he has it.
Just a general reminder.
Just a reminder. He can pardon whoever he wants. So, like, let's not worry about whether anyone's guilty of anything.
Yeah.
Because he can pardon them. I want to see him pardon Don Jr., and then have that be the thing that takes him down.
I'm into that.
Wouldn't that? Because throwing away your presidency for an idiot like Don Jr.
Yeah.
Seems like, I get, he would do anything for Ivanka. I get that he would pardon her, you know?
Yeah.
I'm not worried about that.
Yeah.
Don Jr. seems like a waste. Let him be the one who goes, let him be the fall guy.
Yeah, right.
He looks like a fall guy.
Totally does.
Like, I don't.
Yeah.
I can't imagine a world in which Donald Trump's self-interest does not trump Don Jr.
I know.
Like, nobody likes Don Jr.
No. Well, he's a foul, he's a wretched man.
Yeah, he's a foul human being.
Right,
yeah.
Hilariously, then after that series of tweets and, like, where everyone was sort of like, hey, maybe you can't pardon yourself, he then sent another tweet where he went back to attacking the leakers, which was hilarious. Because he said, while all agree the U.S. president has the complete power to pardon, don't all agree that.
That's the one thing
we
hadn't agreed on.
Why think of that when the only crime so far is the leaks against us?
Certainly,
fake news.
Certainly didn't think of it because you specifically mentioned it just minutes ago.
Right.
That wasn't
right. Exactly. Yeah. No.
It was not the, that's not why I thought of it.
No. No. He's not going. He doesn't need to pardon himself because he didn't do anything wrong, and only leakers have done anything wrong.
People leaking information about how he broke the law is the crime.
That's the crime.
Yeah.
There
him
is.
Breaking the law shouldn't have been known by us because the leakers weren't supposed to tell.
Like, they were doing this all under secrecy.
Yeah.
Like, how dare they?
How dare we expose their lies?
Yeah.
That's rude.
Yeah.
In any case, the other failed thing that Donald Trump tried to do this week was resurrect the healthcare debate.
Right.
It's not fully failed yet because anything could happen.
Yeah. Not only did he fail to resurrect the healthcare debate, he also failed to show an understanding
of the basic facts of the healthcare debate.
What healthcare actually is. Like, at a very core, like, base level of
like
why
what
people
have health insurance is and how it
works.
Yeah. He, first of all, had every position about whether they should repeal Obamacare this week.
Yeah.
He was for it. He was against it. He urged Senate leaders to come to his office to discuss it. They were going to do a full repeal. Then they didn't want to do a full repeal.
Right.
Then they
were just going to let Obamacare crumble.
Right. But then he decided he couldn't stand for
and
that.
And in that New York Times article, he so wisely said, I want to do it or not do it.
Yeah.
I want to either get it done
or not get it done.
I believe.
We don't,
So
we have the quote right here. It's, I want to either get it done or not get it done. If we don't get it done, we're going to watch Obamacare go down the tubes.
That's it. So there's two options.
There's two options.
One,
get it done.
Two,
not get it done. Yeah.
So we can all rest easy about
just knowing he knows
what the options are.
Yeah.
But
the best part of all of this, and the part that you probably saw a headline about if you are on social media, is Maggie Haberman, who was doing the interview, asked him about the political difficulty of taking away benefits that people have
already gotten
used to. Things like healthcare. The Medicaid expansion, the tax credits even.
Yeah.
And his answer was so garbled, but also so clearly showed that he doesn't even understand what health insurance is.
It was about, like, some sort of, like, fantastical system that is, like, you know, dollars a month.
Right. How much does health insurance cost in this system?
That also you pay into in a way that you accrue it, you know, over your lifetime, and then when you're 70 and you need a bunch of money for healthcare, like, then you all of a sudden have it.
Tell me what that system is.
It's called life insurance.
It's life insurance. It's a different insurance system.
It's a different
thing. A different product.
So our president, who's currently trying to do healthcare.
Right.
Or not do healthcare.
Doesn't
know what he thinks it's life insurance.
Yeah. I believe.
Let's read the whole thing.
Let's read the quote.
Yeah.
as they get something, it gets tougher. Mm. Because politically, you can't give it away. Mm. So pre-existing conditions are a tough deal.
Sure.
Because you're basically saying that the from the moment the insurance, you're 21 years old, you start working and you're paying $12 a year for insurance.
Oh, yeah.
And by the time you're 70, you get a nice plan. Yeah. Here's something when you walk up and say, I want my insurance. It's a very tough deal. But it's something that we're going to do that we're doing a good job of. Huh. What is he talking about?
Unpack every word of that for me.
$12 a year has not even, that can't even buy you more than 2 cups of coffee.
No.
Let alone insurance, even life insurance costs more than that. So I don't know what year he's basing his life insurance stats on.
I don't either.
So in any case, whether he thinks he's doing it or not, or we're doing a good job of it or not, or I mean, I can't. From that quote,
no. You don't know.
What I do know is that he thinks health insurance is $12 a year and also thinks it's life insurance.
Also, yes. There it is.
And that might explain why healthcare is tougher than he thought it would be.
That's right. Who knew?
Because if he thinks that we're all...
that health insurance was not also life insurance?
I mean, how could you have made that... It's also probably car insurance. I mean, there's
so
many...
closer to car insurance.
Is my health insurance also renter's insurance?
No.
No.
It's not.
I mean... there's so many kinds of insurance.
Yeah.
Is it?
It's also closer to that, too, though. It's closer to all of the things like, other than life insurance.
Life insurance is literally the only kind of insurance that works this way.
Right. Yeah.
That's one of the mysteries here.
Right.
Well, no. The other mystery is the one thing that life insurance has going for it that the rest of these things don't is that we all have life.
That's true.
Unlike cars, houses, rent, mortgages.
Yes.
Anything that you could insure.
Right.
Life and health are the two things we all have.
Yes.
We either have good or bad health or good or bad lives. But we're either alive or dead and we're either healthy or not.
That's right.
But all of us have health and life.
Profound. And I really
that
am liking where
is
this is
all
going.
That those two things have in common.
It's true.
Those two kinds of insurance are unrelated to...
entirely. Otherwise.
To everything else. Yeah.
Yeah.
But so in any case, we're either going to do it or not. And what we are doing may or may not be life insurance.
But if you're wondering why, you know, there have been, I have heard a lot of Republicans out there talking about why Trump is not out there actively selling healthcare.
Yeah,
now, there is one idea, which I think is at least part of it, is that he doesn't really want to attach his name to this because it's terrible.
Yeah, but, it's mean.
But there, now I feel like...
It's second problem.
The second problem is that he can't sell it to anyone because he doesn't know how to sell it to
anyone. Well, he doesn't know what it is.
Right, exactly.
I think that's probably the bigger problem. I bet he himself would like to go sell it, but that people in the White House have been like, hey, buddy,
maybe
take a back seat.
Yeah.
Because the fact that this question has not been asked of him in a way that has betrayed his lack of knowledge about health insurance before, we knew he didn't understand how hard it was going to be.
Right.
We knew that just like peace in the Middle East, he wasn't sure why we hadn't worked it out yet.
Yeah.
What we didn't know is that his reasons for not knowing this were related to the basic facts of the conversation.
Right.
Mm-hmm. So I feel like they've been pretty controlled about making sure he doesn't get asked questions.
The fact that this healthcare debate has been ongoing as long as it has, and this is the first time that we're hearing about
the man whose planet is.
That he doesn't actually know what it is. I feel like his team should be commended for basically like the first time.
Yeah. this is the one successful thing they've done is for 6 months prevented him from being asked any specific questions about healthcare reform.
Exactly. Yes.
When they finally settled on the idea that they wanted to do a repeal only bill and maybe just replace it later, you know, they were going to do the repeal and replace later.
Well, they dug up the repeal bill that they all voted for in 2015, basically, and tweaked it a little bit, but not really.
Yeah. Here's some information about it. CBO score says, or CBO says, that it will leave 32 million people without coverage. So they just keep increasing that number. They're trying hard.
My first thought was, only 32 million?
I know.
Because I was sort of like...
Well, but it doesn't include the... it does include, but that number itself doesn't include the fact that premiums are going to jump over 25% over the... are going to jump 25% in the first year.
Right.
17 million people will lose insurance year one.
Yeah.
And
which was way worse than the other bills.
Yeah, way worse.
Yeah. But it was going to cut the deficit by $473 billion, which is really what they care about, right?
That's what they care about.
Yeah.
I'm going to tell you a secret, America. Yeah. That's not that. That's that money
not
that
much.
Is not that
over
much,
a decade.
And it's over a decade, and it's not worth all of our health.
It's not. No.
It
isn't. But this doesn't make any sense to me. I have had trouble.
Who has their feet to over the fire here? Because,
I
have said repeatedly, they don't have the votes to pass the vote that they passed when they knew that it wasn't going to pass.
And I feel like, you know, I realize that McConnell is grasping at straws because, like, I think that he rightly feels like it's going to be hard for him to run in. Yes, it would have been hard for him to run on this bill in 2018. Yeah. But I think that he sees a world wherein his base, like, just doesn't show up in 2018 because, like, why would I continue to vote for you? Because I voted for you and you have a majority in both houses. I voted for your fucking idiot president that I was supposed to vote for. And here you are, having voted 700 times over the course of the last 8 years to get rid of Obamacare. And I wanted you to get rid of Obamacare, even though they're probably on it, but they're just idiots and they don't know. And, like, he's gonna have a real base problem without doing something.
I think,
but, like, bringing up the repeal vote that you know you don't have the votes for and, like, making people who voted for it in 2015 switch their vote, I feel like you're really sort of, like, you're playing a dicey game with some of your own caucus. Yeah, exactly. Many of whom are going to have to go in 2018 and then now explain to people why they voted one way in 2015 and then voted a different way in 2017 on the same bill.
Run in swing states where they can't be Ted Cruz.
Yeah.
And those people can't vote for a straight repeal. No.
Well, and they're not going to have to vote for it anyway because three people have already come out and said that they were against it. So they're already fucked now, especially considering John McCain isn't there,
not there. Yeah.
Yeah.
But
even still, it just doesn't.
Strategically,
this
has not made much sense to me.
I don't think it does
at all.
Yeah.
And I don't think it's because I'm missing something.
I think it's
literally
either.
Stupid.
I think, bingo. I think you're right.
And I think, if I knew that they'd never had the votes to pass a straight repeal, and we all knew, by the way, you guys, in our bones, we've known for years, there was no way that if Obama wasn't the president, those repeal bills would have passed.
No, of course not.
They might have passed the House. The House is nuts. But they were never going to pass the Senate if they were feasible bills. Because you don't want to be the guy who has to figure out what to do when 32 million people are like, hey, what are you going to do for me now?
And as you have said many times, you think that part of the reason that they sort of like don't have the replace right now is because they weren't expecting to win the White House.
No, exactly.
Yeah.
Well, and also there's another reason they don't have a replace, and it's because this is their replace.
This is their replace, yeah.
And there's nothing else.
Yeah, I mean, you literally have Tom Price, who we talked about last week, going out and being like, let's just dust off what we were doing before Obamacare. So, like, their replace is repeal and replace are the same thing to them.
Yeah, in this situation. I mean, that's what it's been with every one of these bills. It's either been a partial repeal or a full repeal, but the effect of the repeal will have been a repeal.
Right, correct.
When millions, tens of millions of people are going to lose health insurance and everyone else's insurances are going to spike or they're going to be underinsured again, that's losing these protections. That's losing Obamacare.
Yeah.
And I have never understood why they didn't come up with a clever way to call something Trump Care or whatever, where they improve Obamacare, bring costs down. That was going to be a boon to the insurance companies, and they were going to have their never-ending love and support.
They could have got probably a couple Democrats to vote.
They could have got
Joe Manchin
on board.
I mean,
Claire
Heidi
McCaskill
Heitkamp.
Or Heidi Heitkamp. I mean, those people are ready to vote for an evil plan anytime.
Yeah. To keep Obamacare and just maybe tweak something.
They could have gotten
like it was better.
A lot of Democrats to vote. I mean, they don't want the Democrats to vote with them. But I mean, they could have gotten enough people on board to make the kinds of tweaks that would have brought costs down and would have improved insurance. And what they would have had to secretly be doing is strengthen the mandate, but they would have called it something else. What happened to the party that could call
call it the personal responsibility function or what or something
what
like that?
What happened
or,
to
you
the
know,
party
like
that could spin a fucking idea into nonsense?
Yes.
You know, they could pass a bill where every puppy in America is murdered and call it the Rainbow and Sunshines Bill.
Right. Yeah.
Like,
I don't know.
Who are these people?
Yeah.
They're not Republicans.
No.
Republicans are branding experts.
Yeah.
And the only branding expert they have in there is Donald Trump, and he doesn't know what the hell he's supposed to be branding right now.
No.
He's not familiar with the policy.
Oh, God.
In any case, so this procedural vote that's scheduled for Tuesday is grim.
We don't even know what the vote
Susan Collins got on Face the Nation today and said it appears we're gonna have a vote on Tuesday, but we don't know whether we're voting on the House bill, the first version of the Senate bill, the second version of the Senate bill, a straight repeal. Like, they don't know what they're voting on.
No.
And you know, John McCain's still not there, so they still are on real thin ice because nobody wants to have to come out against it, but enough people have that.
Yeah.
But in the midst of all this chaos, we had a bizarre moment of clarity
of happen. Yeah.
because Al Gore came out in favor of single payer.
Yeah.
You might remember Al Gore as the borderline Republican Democratic candidate for president who
2000
lost to George Bush because he can't fight an effective legal battle in the courts.
And also because he put an actual Republican on his
Joe Lieberman, who later became a Republican, was his running mate. Joe Lieberman was one of the leading asshats of the Senate at the time.
Still is. I mean, and he's not at the Senate.
He's not in the Senate anymore, but he remains an asset. Yeah, totally. He hasn't stopped being an asset just because he left the Senate. But Al Gore, who essentially tried to run as a full Republican, and that's why he couldn't even win his home state.
Yeah.
Or any state, really, or because he didn't win enough of them.
Didn't get enough.
Didn't get enough of them.
There it is.
Yeah. He won the popular vote, but only that's because George Bush was an actual idiot.
Yeah.
But Al Gore came out in favor of single payer.
That's right.
That's who.
And I didn't realize that he had actually sort of like quasi come out in favor of it in 2002. But we're going to read you a couple quotes because this week he said, and I like how he worded this, and I'll tell you why. But he said, the private sector has not shown any ability to provide good, affordable health care for all. I believe we ought to have single-payer health care. And that is not revolutionary in its thought.
No, it's right.
But it's correct, right. Yes. But I like the idea of, look,
we gave the private sector a shot.
Yeah, exactly. Like, one thing that, like, all Americans can agree on, like, regardless of party, is that health insurance companies are garbage. Yeah. Nobody likes them. They were literally, prior to Obamacare, like, attempting to kill us.
Yeah.
So, like, in an active way.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, we hate them. Everybody hates them.
That's a bipartisan issue.
Right, exactly. And what Obamacare does, and what we have always hated about Obamacare, is that it just forces you to buy them. Yes, it puts some regulations on them that make them a little bit less terrible. They can't quite as actively try and murder you as they were doing, like, prior to Obamacare. But, like, who needs them?
Nobody.
So, the reasoning here about, like, how they have now failed to offer us cheap and good quality health insurance.
The competition was supposed to be
exactly.
the answer,
like,
and
they
it
were
wasn't.
They were supposed to, like, get this done.
Right.
So, like, I like that. Like, let's, A, remember that we all hate health insurance companies.
Right.
Let's, B, remember that they had their shot.
Yeah.
Like, I just...
Decades of a shot.
Right? I feel like it's just... It's like an easy sell. And there's so many easy sells about this. Because who doesn't like free healthcare? Like, that on its face is an easy sell.
Also, I mean, this for me goes along well with the idea that it's good for
business. Totally.
Which is how I've always thought they should sell it. And so I feel like this line of reasoning...
Yeah.
It's not that you need to convince the left that it's good for business and the private sector had its shot.
Right.
But it is that you need to convince people where this is the language that they speak about politics in,
And
that it's a good idea.
And Republicans
love
sentence that starts off with the private sector.
Yeah. They love the private sector.
Yeah.
They love things that are good for business.
Sure.
And I think we need to re-spin the idea of Medicare for All as something that is good for business. Because the only business it's not good for is
health insurance business, and who fucking cares?
Yeah, they had their shot, in the words of Al Gore.
There it is.
But it's also...
Couldn't do it.
Yeah, if the private sector has not succeeded here.
Yeah.
And if the private sector couldn't succeed, then we should remember that we've been giving them a shot.
Right, yes.
We shouldn't
forget,
for decades.
Since
we shouldn't
the beginning
forget
of...
that we have given them a fair chance to do good here.
Yeah.
They were given decades of no regulations to succeed. They failed to do that.
Yeah.
They were given decades of some regulations to succeed.
Mm-hmm.
Didn't do that. They were given an opportunity to be at the negotiating table when we renegotiated their own role in healthcare.
Yep.
They failed.
We gave them an opportunity to literally have people be forced to buy their products.
Yes. Yeah. Couldn't do it.
Still, like, every opportunity has been afforded
to
them. Yeah, and they didn't do it.
But apparently in 2002, he said something similar.
Yeah,
where
he said,
I know. He said, I think we've reached a point where the entire healthcare system is in impending crisis. I have reluctantly come to the conclusion that we should begin drafting a single-payer national health insurance plan. This was around the time that he had his, like, reawakening as a human.
Right. Well,
because remember back in the 90s, he couldn't be trusted to do anything that wasn't pro-business because the Clinton White House was extremely pro-business.
And after 2000, he sort of, you know, went to a dark place. Remember he grew that weird
beard
while, and it was like,
that
I mean,
was not fun.
You know, and look, can't blame him.
It was a sad time.
For that. I mean, I blamed him.
Right.
So I guess I
It's true. In a certain sense, I specifically blamed him.
Right, exactly. But I can't blame him for being like, sad about it. I'm not trying to, you know, be out in the world for a couple of years right now.
That was an embarrassing time.
It was grim. Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
It was a very embarrassing time.
But I sure didn't realize he was talking about healthcare in 2002.
No one did, because at that time we were not interested in hearing from him because he was a huge loser.
That's right.
He managed to win. He's the first Democrat who managed to win the presidency and lose it somehow.
Correct.
Clinton then did that again. But Al Gore really set the stage for that kind of winning loseriness.
That's right. Yes.
That's why there was a precedent for her to hold on to. That's why she didn't have to fight.
Yeah, exactly.
She was like, well, this is just what we do.
I am convinced that he's running for president in 2020.
I am fascinated by this idea. Not because I want him to run for president, but just because I think it makes for good gossip.
Yeah.
Because I actually think he would be maybe the worst choice for a person to run for president. Not because I don't think he's trendy now and he's cool and he's into the environment and I get all of those things. Yeah. I think the idea of running our first Clinton-ish failure for president again is like a sign that we honestly can't come up with anything.
Yeah.
Like, that's a sign that we've given up.
I just, yeah.
But
I mean, like,
I see what you're saying here.
Yeah. I mean, like, first off, if you haven't seen, well, it comes out next week. I'm excited to see it, the new Inconvenient sequel.
Yeah.
But, like, if you've seen the trailer, it's basically like a 2-minute Trump hit piece.
Yeah.
Basically, of him pulling out of the Paris Climate Accord. So I'm assuming the movie takes a similar course throughout its, you know, hour and a half long. You know, however long it is. But anyway, so, like, you know, that's not shocking because, like, obviously he's going to hate Trump, like, for these specific reasons because, like, climate is his bag now. But, like, knowing that climate is his bag now and knowing that we sort of, like, stopped caring about him generally and also what he thinks on anything other than climate, it seemed an odd choice
for him
to like, get in on the Medicare for All game this week.
I know.
Like, and that sort of...
Well, and I'm excited that this is becoming a litmus test.
Yes,
because I think you're right that he might be angling to potentially run. And
because we think that's why Kirsten Gillibrand did it,
I mean,
too.
She's been doing a lot to get in on the game.
Totally.
But I think this is going to be something you're going to have said before it was trendy that you were in favor of Medicare for All.
Cory Booker, you can't come to this later down the road.
No, exactly. Like, and... this is the right time because it's no longer scary to say it. You're not going to be laughed out of America.
Right.
They're having to pay lip service to it. We're going to talk in a second about how even Schumer is paying lip service
and
to it.
And we're talking about healthcare, like, as a nation right now, obviously, because it's an issue.
But it's still early enough that no one yet is saying it's feasible, and so this is the moment.
Yeah, exactly.
You have to say it now or you forever hold your peace and also lose the presidency.
Yeah, I think he would have, like, an interesting sort of, like... place though.
Nostalgia campaign?
I'm certain, well, partially at least. Anyway, I think there will be worse people in the race, probably. I think that, like, a lot of the millennials who are really gonna, like, take to the whole climate science business are not going to, and not even necessarily millennials at that point, but, like, people, like,
humans.
That was the first election I voted in, and I am, like, the oldest of the millennials.
Right.
And, like, they're not going to remember that massive fuck up. I feel like he could make himself the type of candidate, like, that could get a lot of, like, the Bernie people. Like, not all of them, because he doesn't have that whole thing. And he's certainly not a socialist, like, by any stretch of the imagination.
Definitely not.
But I mean, like, I feel like he could sort of, like, have a similar
kind
place
of
in a way.
I think my only concern with him is, A, I think that anyone who has such strong... stench of Clinton is dead in the water. We're talking about a man who literally served in the Clinton White House.
Sure.
And one of the things that sunk Hillary was no matter what she said about any issue, the Clintons had done the wrong thing about it before.
Interestingly, though, I think one of the reasons that he actually lost the presidency, though...
Well, he didn't agree with any of...
Well, right, was because he ran so far from, I mean, literally, the reason that he picked Joe Lieberman was because Joe Lieberman was, like, the one Democrat who wanted to impeach Bill Clinton. I mean, like...
I know, but he didn't run far from them policy-wise.
No,
he ran far from them lifestyle-wise.
Lifestyle-wise, and he, like, didn't have Clinton
he
on the campaign trail.
He ran far from
them
in the way that Tim Kaine is different from Clinton.
Correct, right.
And that isn't... I just think that this is the kind of this is great that he came out for single payer, and
totally.
It's so exciting that he is part of this conversation on the environment. I think that if we were to get into, like, a real policy discussion about what he stands for, there would be a rude awakening about what his actual platform would be as president.
Oh, I agree.
And I think that millennials might feel like it's fun to hang out with him briefly. Yeah. I don't think he could have the kind of staying power.
But once they find out that he would have signed the TPP in half a hot second,
there'd be problems. Well, not even. I mean, once they remember that his hands are also on the criminal justice reform efforts that failed in Clinton.
Yeah,
there are so many things that I think are also important issues. he's all, you know, he's late to gay rights. He's late to a lot of the lifestyle issues they care about. He's certainly late to the criminal justice reform issues that everyone cares about. It's cool that he's into the environment, and I'm thrilled that he came out for single payer healthcare. But I'm thrilled because that says to me that there's room for moderate Democrats to come out for this, that there's like an awakening going on amongst themselves, that they're kind of like, listen, we handed the Republicans their own plan and they wouldn't accept it.
Right.
If they're not going to accept that, why is it crazy for us to talk about this other thing? So I'm excited about that. I think that he would be a terrible candidate for president. Like
The one thing that I would say, and the reason why I would actually maybe want him to run but not get the nomination, is that he, I think, could be a strong enough voice that he could push some of these people on climate scientists further than they already are.
I think he would be a great addition to the primary.
Totally, 100%.
You know, like, I love anyone running in the primary.
He could get far enough along that he could make sure whoever won was, like, for him to endorse them was going to say that they were in favor of, like, cap and trade or something.
If he could Martin O'Malley his way through this, then I'm for it, you know?
Sure.
If he plays the part of Martin O'Malley in the next primary, I want to see that.
Yeah, but Martin O'Malley really didn't get much from that, though. But
he didn't, but Martin O'Malley was the reason that, was one of the reasons that Hillary Clinton started to look so far to the right that she had to pull back.
Yeah, that's
Martin
true.
O'Malley played an important role in the larger discourse. He didn't get anything out of it, but Al Gore has had his chance.
I agree.
He ran for president already. It's over. Don't be you can't be president anymore. You didn't do it. But I think that if he were to interject himself into such a setting,
he'd have things to say that people should hear.
Right, and that he could play a role where he himself isn't glorified in any way, but that he kind of offers some perspective on things.
Yeah.
But yeah, even Schumer, and this is super cop-out-y.
Yeah.
Like, he didn't say, like, they are pursuing this in any way.
No.
But he is now having to include single payer in the list of things that they are looking at to address healthcare reform.
Right, yes.
Which is interesting to me.
Yes.
Because even that is...
That's a step.
Saying single payer... In the Senate, used to be a revolutionary act.
Yeah.
That Bernie Sanders was the only person talking about it for a long time.
Yeah.
And he sounded like a crackpot
because
everyone was looking at him like, you're a literal lunatic if you think that you can do this.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, we have some breaking in the ranks, including people who are in Senate leadership or, you know, shadow leadership, if you will.
They're all in Senate leadership.
The whole caucus is in leadership. Yeah. But, I mean, you have an actual constituency for single payer within the Democratic Senate leadership.
Yeah.
And then because of that, you now have Chuck Schumer admitting that he's heard of single payer healthcare and that it is a thing they're going to have to look at.
That's where
it starts.
Right. I'm going to read you his quote. He said, "We're going to look at broader things for the nation's healthcare system. Single payer is one of them. Many things are on the table." That being the key, I feel like.
Yeah,
is the
that
thing
he's saying
that
we're not looking at it, but we're looking at it.
Medicare for people above 55 is on the table. A buy-in to Medicare is on the table. A buy-in to Medicaid is on the table. And while, yes, I totally agree with you, like that was in response to a question that George Stephanopoulos asked him as a follow-up to his big spiel about how big and bold and better the Democrats were going to be in 2018. And then... he didn't have an answer for what they thought about
healthcare.
Yes, he is like, so basically I took that as like, all right, well, they're not going to like, they're not going to shun people who are running on single payer, but otherwise like they ain't got no,
well, they have no plan either.
Yeah, exactly.
I am excited that they're not going to shun people.
Well, yeah, of course. No, I'm not saying that either. But
no,
it was funny in the context of the interview where he was like, we're going to be big. We're going to be bold. We're going to have better jobs.
Here's
we're gonna
a
have
list
better
of 75
this.
Minor ideas.
Right, exactly.
We might have
and then George Stephanopoulos was like, tell us about healthcare. And he was like, well, everything is on the table.
Right. We don't have any ideas, but all of them are on the table.
Right. We're either going to get it done or we're not going to get it done. He basically gave like a better version of Trump's answer.
A wordier version of Trump's answer. Trump's was succinct.
It was.
He was right. They're either going to get it done or not.
That's right.
That's one of the only true things he said so far as president. So I, you know, I'm impressed by that.
Yeah.
But yeah, I feel like this is sort of like, this is Chuck Schumer's version of being bold. It's just that like, that's how sad things are.
Right, exactly.
Because that is pretty bold for him to admit he's heard of single payer.
Right, yeah.
He's not a guy who walks around admitting he's heard of any of these ideas.
No.
He's a guy who walks around grumbling and saying nothing except for when he can take credit for things. So this is bold. It's just that this is not bold enough.
Yeah.
And I love how he said the number one thing we did wrong is we didn't tell people what we stood for. When you lose an election, you look at yourself in the mirror and say, what did we do wrong? He's right.
He's right.
They didn't tell us what they stood for.
Yeah.
He didn't in this quote either, though.
No.
About healthcare.
No. And not only that, but like, I feel like they are, you know, there was a ABC Washington Post poll that actually just came out this week, and it said 37% of Americans say the Democratic Party stands for, or stands for something. 37% say they stand for something, and 52% say the party stands only for opposing President Trump.
Yeah, and 20% more people right. think that the Democrats just stand
yeah.
for opposing Donald Trump. And 15%.
And that is because we just ran an election on that,
yeah.
and we've since run a few congressional elections
yeah, on
that.
Not
one
being Donald
specifically
Trump.
That we spent tens of millions of dollars on.
Exactly.
They're not wrong.
No.
But the problem is that he and Pelosi are taking the wrong message from that.
Yes.
In that instead of then saying, okay, we stand for this, 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 and granted they are supposedly rolling out their plan tomorrow and maybe it'll be the greatest plan
it
for,
won't be.
The,
go ahead.
You know, and,
let's dream.
Yeah, exactly. Let's dream. But like, basically their takeaway was like, well, the voters had the wrong thoughts about us.
Right. Not we had the wrong thoughts about the voters.
Right. Or we had the wrong policies to offer them. Or we ran only on... it was basically sort of like, yes,
they
we
didn't
fucked
know
up.
Us in our hearts.
Right, exactly. It's like, so he's acknowledging that we fucked up, which is like the good step one.
Right. Clinton can't do that. So
right.
it's they got
exactly.
one step beyond her.
Right. But then you have to go from there. And where they've gone from there is basically taking them back to
where they
not
started.
Having acknowledged step one.
Yeah.
So close.
So close.
But, yet,
but you got to try harder
so,
next time,
so,
you guys.
So far.
And we're about to know exactly how far because,
really?
Well, the Democrats are rolling out a new slogan tomorrow as part of their plan.
Oh, God.
Media currently doesn't seem to have an agreement about which right. slogan it is.
Well, it's tomorrow. Maybe.
But it's tomorrow, so maybe yeah. we'll know by the time you listen
right.
to this.
Maybe they'll have changed it overnight.
But we're
going to
read you both options.
Yeah.
And maybe, yeah,
we'll
hopefully
one,
it's neither of these.
We'll tell you which one we like better, because there's a clear
right.
winner, I
yeah.
feel like. But.
So New York Magazine said that the slogan is, a better deal, better jobs, better wages, better future. Washington Post, who broke the story, said it was, a better deal, better skills, better jobs, better wages.
The first one is better.
Way better. A, it mentions the future, as if
yep.
they've heard of it. B, it doesn't say skills, like they're going to train us for a dumb factory job that doesn't exist anymore as part of this plan.
They'll choose the second one.
Duh. I mean,
yeah.
they have to be patronizing if they can
yeah.
get away with it. It references all of the past. The Roosevelts had a lot of
yeah.
deals for us. You know, Theodore Roosevelt had the square deal. FDR had the new deal.
Right.
You know, Donald Trump
has the art of the deal.
The art of the deal.
Yeah.
So we're supposed to be referencing lots of deals. But, and the plan is supposed to have some stuff like supporting $15 an hour minimum wage at
yeah.
the federal level and some job training programs and trade
sure.
deals and prescription drug costs and all of that. Chuck Schumer in an ABC interview said the Democrats have been too, quote, namby-pamby in their economic messaging.
Sure.
So it seems like they know the problem, but they don't seem to know the solution.
Right.
Mike.com talked to a bunch of marketing and branding experts about this new slogan,
so
and it was like universally panned.
Yeah.
They called it
painfully
dry,
dry,
a missed opportunity, exactly how the Republican Party wins.
Right. Mm-hmm.
One said that, you know, Sanders and Obama had been able to connect with the public on an emotional level, so they weren't just trying to sell people specific policies, and then said, quote, that seems to be what was missing from Hillary Clinton's campaign. Bernie probably had at least figured out policy positions, but he talked about the emotional benefits of his ideas. This
yeah.
is like a real on-the-nose, like, policy forward, but no policy attached
yeah,
kind
exactly.
of motto.
Yeah. And even, like, as stupid and ridiculous and as ridiculed as it was, like, Make America Great Again, like, is a good slogan in the sense that, like, you can sort of, like, argue whether America is great, and you
right.
can argue whether... I mean, there's a lot of things to argue about that slogan, but, like, it's short. Every word is very active. Like, literally
it's
every
active.
Every
yeah.
word, like, is doing something in that slogan. Like, it's a good slogan in terms of just, like, slogan writing.
Right.
This is, like, garbage slogan writing.
Yeah, it's complicated. The media doesn't even remember what
order
the things came
you'll
in.
You'll never remember it, like,
never
as a
once.
Human. It's
no.
too... You're not going to be able to fit it on a bumper
I've already
sticker.
Forgotten it. And
yeah.
I can't even...
There's skills,
a better
there's
deal,
futures, there's wages, there's jobs.
Also,
there's...
here's the other thing. They, like, a new deal and a square deal.
Right.
Those are definitive kinds of deals. A better deal just implies we can hope for a mediocre amount better than what we have.
Exactly. It's going to be better.
Things are the same but slightly better.
Yeah.
When you get this the new deal, it was new. It was a whole new deal.
Yeah.
That sounded like a policy.
Yeah.
That was a new policy that had not previously been the policy, and we weren't just going to slightly improve and tweak the policy, but we were going to give you a new, exciting policy.
Yeah. This is the, like, fancier, markety-er way of saying Democrats, because, hey, have you seen the other guys?
Exactly.
Remember that slogan that we told you about?
That was like, they were considering?
DNC was, like, considering as, like, I don't think, they weren't considering it as, like, the platform slogan, but, like, they were considering it as, like, a thing to, like, put
on bumper
stickers.
But
this also,
this,
like,
better...
This is that, but just, like,
fancier.
This better
deal slogan seems oddly mired in, like, a manufacturing mentality, too, because... Mm. Better jobs, better wages. It's all about jobs. These are words that we use when we're talking to, like, union members.
Yeah, well, they're trying to get the people that left for Trump.
Yeah, of course they are. But this is not going to connect with people who don't have jobs or wages, which is all young people.
Yeah.
And maybe if they choose the future one, which I'm sure they won't, that will be exciting. But certainly, I hope better skills isn't involved. No. And that's a nightmare. But this is just, like, a bunch of nonsense words.
Yeah.
That don't even, it sounds like Democrats vote for mediocrity.
Yeah.
Like, it doesn't offer any sort of, and also, and one of the other things these branding experts talked about, but it doesn't in any way harness the activist energy that has been running through the Democratic Party since Trump became the president.
Yeah.
And that is a fool move.
Yeah.
Because if we pretend that that's not happening, and instead the Democrats are like, a better deal, wages, jobs, and boring things, then what are all of these 20-something activists who've been hitting the streets every weekend supposed to feel excited
about? On some level, and, like, this wasn't great either, but, like, one of those options for, like, the bumper stickers that we talked about a while ago was, like, resist and persist.
That was,
like,
way better.
That was way better.
I mean, it
better.
Was terrible because it only talked about resisting and it didn't.
But
and
persisting is like...
Resisting and
like,
persisting are not active either.
I know. But I'm just I'm saying just like in
resist,
the scope of
saying
like...
Saying the word resist.
Exactly. I just feel like there were... Yeah, there were ways to like make this sort of like appealing to... I think
you're right that the one thing that Make America Great Again had going for it, despite its obvious stupidity, was that it's so active and like straightforward.
Yeah.
And that the better deal doesn't sound active. It sounds meandery. Mm-hmm. Like, the things that they say they're going to make better are not dreamy, visionary things. They're, like, wages, dinner time, schedules. Like, these are, like, it's, like, really, like, specific, like, boring things that they're going to make better. Like, and jobs, nobody wants jobs. We want to live happy lives with money.
Sure.
Nobody wants jobs. Like, I don't want a president that's only thinking about jobs because I want a president that's thinking about how I can have healthcare and how I can have an education and these things that make me a complete person.
Yeah.
So like this only references the worst parts of being a human, basically.
Right. Ugh, jobs.
Like, don't.
I've got to go to my job.
Remind me about jobs
and
wages.
And then Democrats talk about it all day.
It's just like your future is just jobs and wages. Right. That's all we care about.
Right.
That is if they go with the future one. Otherwise, it's just skills, jobs, and wages. That's even worse.
Grim.
In any case, in an update to the saga of John McCain not returning to the Senate.
Yeah.
We also found out this week that mass that they removed from behind his eye was cancerous.
Yeah, he's got cancer.
This isn't the first time he's had cancer.
No.
And it probably won't be the last. But
unfortunately, it might be, which is sad.
Well,
it's very...
It's an aggressive kind of tumor.
This is not the kind of cancer that you're... I mean, you're never trying to get cancer.
Right.
But like, this is certainly not one of the kinds that you're...
Yes. I think they removed the whole thing as much as they know they... You know, I think that they think they removed it all.
Yeah.
But he might now have to do chemo or radiation.
Yeah. Yes, he does have to.
Yeah.
So
his recovery
his
is going to be...
His doctor said the senator showed no neurological problems before or after the operation, which makes
means
me
they didn't see the Comey hearings.
They did not see that. Yeah. Is that too soon? No. Can we say that? Is that right? Okay. Very
He's
good.
A public figure.
I mean, I feel, like
been
once,
offered up for...
I feel like once Trump, by way of Sarah Huckabee Sanders, like has said that he's not sure whether he regrets...
Right.
Saying that he likes people who hadn't been caught.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like we can say whatever we want about him.
Yeah,
right?
Exactly.
I mean,
also,
the president still can't decide whether he likes him or not, so who might care?
We have been very complimentary to John McCain
really
in the last
few
weeks on this podcast.
I know, because
we're
reminding
America that he's doing some heroic...
He's being asked to do a lot, the man.
...foreign policy work.
Yeah, exactly.
But I'm not going to pretend like I also don't think he's mostly an asset. So I think we're in a weird position here.
And one of the things that, like, I was reminded of this week, which sort of, like, made me be like, oh, yeah, like, John McCain sort of, like, I feel like at his core is, like, maybe not, like, the world's worst person. And, like, and then I also had, like, the second thought of, like, holy fuck, what happened between 2008 and 2016 that, like, led us to, like, the shitstorm that we're in right now. Yeah. But a lot of people were posting that video, and I had forgotten about it, of him at the town hall where that woman gets up and asks him a question and is like,
going on,
Obama is an Arab. Like, why would you? And he literally, like, steals the microphone away from her and is like, no, ma'am, he's not an Arab. He's an American citizen. He is just a man who I disagree with on policies.
Right, but he's a good man.
He's a, and I was sort of like, first off, that's probably why I lost.
Right.
But,
look who's the president.
Right, exactly. But, like, and then I had that moment of, like, that was only 8 years ago, and there is, like, no fucking place for that right now.
I know.
You know what I mean?
Crazy.
Like, it's crazy and sad.
Scary, yeah. Yeah. That's, but it is, that's an interesting moment, because that's a moment where John McCain hadn't moved on with the rest of the world.
Right.
Because at that moment, there wasn't really a place for that either. That's
had
why
he
didn't become the president.
Right. Had he taken on the Barack Obama is an Arab,
right,
we'd be, but you know, reminiscing the McCain years.
Exactly.
Right now. We wouldn't be reminiscing because they would have been terrible. But
exactly.
I mean, you know, we'd be
remembering the horror of them.
Yeah.
But
I mean, granted, he had his vice president out talking about how he was basically a terrorist. So, I mean, he wasn't doing everything right.
Right.
He was palling around with Bill Ayers.
Exactly.
Who, yes. Exactly.
Yeah,
so,
I remember.
I mean,
but John McCain, I think his personal style of politics was sort of lost in that moment, because that was the moment where reality television became the name of the game. Sarah Palin is sort of the moment that the presidential election became a reality show. And it was John McCain that brought us that moment.
Yeah.
John McCain was trying not to bring, he didn't know he was bringing us that moment. But it was John McCain that brought us that moment.
Yeah. Yes.
So,
exciting
times.
History, guys.
And finally, as one final goodbye to the original Spicy.
Oh, God.
The best reality character a nation could ever have asked for.
I do not get the story, but it makes me laugh.
My favorite thing that I've learned about Sean Spicer so
and
far.
This was
and this
report,
is Sean Spicer,
this was,
former Easter Bunny. I mean, we even know this man was the Easter Bunny.
And this is also from a story in the Wall Street Journal, in case you think that we just, like, made up some
cockamamie
story about... Yeah, exactly. Sean Spicer, apparently, early on in his days at the White House, realized that he was a man who wanted a mini fridge.
Yeah.
And there was only one place for him to get one, apparently. It wasn't a store that sells mini fridges. It was in a separate building where some of the junior aides worked, and they had a mini fridge. So,
what did Sean Spicer do?
Sean Spicer sent one of his people over there, and basically...
Under the cover of night.
First they went over there and
first,
said, give us the mini fridge.
Right. And the aides were
we
like,
we want this mini fridge.
Nah.
And they were like, no, you can't have our stupid mini fridge.
Right. Get your own mini fridge.
So later, under the cover of night, Sean Spicer himself, he was the one seen. This is how we know where it was going, was dragging the mini fridge from the building in which it belongs.
Right. To
his own office.
Huh.
To where he became the owner of a stolen mini fridge.
Yeah. Like,
that's Sean Spicer for you, right there.
Does it get returned now? Does Sarah keep it? Do we know?
No.
I mean, I feel
she's going to want a mini fridge.
I'm invested now.
Yeah.
This happened to me once at an office. This is classic office-based style shenanigans.
I was
going to
say. Oh, yeah, for sure. And people like having mini fridges in their office. Like,
at one point, stole a chair under the cover of darkness because my boss would...
I remember this.
I had
would
a broken
not
chair,
allow you to have a,
and they wouldn't allow me to have a non-broken chair.
Yes, there was a real chair.
So I had a temporary chair, and he, under the cover of darkness, stole my working chair and replaced it with the broken chair that I had already tried to get rid of.
That's right. Yeah.
So I, under the cover of darkness, went to another building,
stole
a similar looking working chair
to the broken chair, right?
Literally had to have a lookout person as I did this.
Yeah.
And under the cover of darkness, rolled it into my office.
Which sounds ridiculous, but like, as a person who is just, you know, like, it doesn't sound like something that a person who is working as the United States press secretary would be getting involved in.
Well, it just sounds like if I had been...
Not to say that, you know, you're just some...
If I had been making
more than
$35,000 a year, I might have considered buying my own chair.
Right, exactly.
Sean Spicer was a man who could have purchased a mini fridge. he wasn't
or had one purchased
and
for him.
By the way,
I mean, Donald Trump is a man who installed a button to have Diet Coke delivered to him
exactly.
in the Oval Office.
Like
I'm sure they had a budget for a mini fridge.
Yes.
Like, he could have asked for a mini fridge.
I
and
just
probably
can't
got the mini
live
fridge.
In a world where his answer to needing a mini fridge was to take someone's mini fridge. But that kind of is the perfect example of this presidency.
That's it. Yep.
You can't buy your own mini fridge and coexist peacefully with other people who have mini fridges.
No. You can't win your own election.
You can't win your own election. You're going to steal that shit.
That's right.
You're going to steal, like, take it out of someone else's hands.
There it is.
So that someone else doesn't have a mini fridge.
That's right.
And you do.
It's just like healthcare.
It's just like healthcare.
Yep.
And life insurance.
Yep.
In any case.
Oh boy.
That's the news this week.
Politicon's
next week.
Follow us
on social media.
Yeah.
We'll give you the dirt rundown stuff. Mm-hmm. We'll be obsessing all week.
Maybe some interviews.
Yeah.
Hopefully.
Yeah. What the hell are we doing there otherwise? But stay tuned. We will be on social media directing you to whatever we are doing at Politicon. And until next week, stay strong, Spicy.
Yep.
It's going to be okay.
Hang in there.
Yeah. It's gonna. An anger management class would do you wonders, I think.
That's right.
Yeah. He's probably pretty angry right now. In any case, bye.